Welcome to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. This show's mission is to give you the knowledge, tools, and power to achieve success, whether you're starting a small business or you already have one. I'm Jack Mancini, and I'm here with my business partner, Adam Sunholder.
Each week, we'll be talking business, small business, drawing on our collective experience of having owned and operated 20 small companies and coached and advised for hundreds more. Dirty Secrets of Small Business will debunk the common myths of business ownership, expose the impact of government regulation, share small business success stories, and reveal the dirty secrets of small business.
In today's show, we're going to be focusing on four areas. The first is common myths of small business ownership. The second is dirty secret of the week. The third section or segment is how come with a question mark. And that's one of the questions that I'm going to pose as I ponder the world over the last week since our program. And then small business success stories, which come from the MVP client success, which Adam is going to chronicle for us. You know, most small business owners are stuck in a state of how. How do I make a profit plan? How do I present my company? How do I create a marketing plan? How do I find good people? The list of how questions really is endless. We're Maximum Value Partners, MVP, and we're business coaches. We help small business owners get unstuck from that state of how.
And if you want to reach us when we're not in the studio or on air here, you can reach us at 877-849-0670. That's 877-849-0670. Or better yet, visit us at MaximumVP.com. All right. Our common myth for this week that we're going to debunk.
Debunk.
And this one is one that I think many people can relate to, and it can explain why so many owners are often very tired and spent. All right. And that is, there's a myth out there that more customers are better than fewer customers. But more customers are better than fewer customers.
Now, is that logical? That's not what I heard all the time. It's keep getting customers, more customers, more customers.
Yeah, they keep chasing, right? Why is that?
Yeah, I agree with you, but I'm going to ask anyway.
I think we have a caveat here, right? The idea is that you got to have more of the right customers. That's what you're really looking for, because not all customers are created equally. So people get into that, what we often refer to as chasing dollars, chasing revenue, and bringing those customers in. They aren't focused on profit in terms of when we talk about the right kind of customers. Profit's a key piece in defining what a right customer looks like.
Well, that's for sure. You know, it's also product of another statement that we use a lot. And what we like to say is more customers are better than fewer customers. That myth is being debunked. But it depends. It depends on what stage your company is at. So, and what type of company you are. So more customers for a retail company might make some sense. If you're a startup or a company trying to right-side itself, more customers may be a real problem for you. But for the most part, you gotta place the customer, you gotta place that question on the stage of the company's growth, if you will. Because once you get the resources in place, and once you get the systems in place, to have more customers makes sense for you because you can handle it. But we're talking about very small businesses, and that means from 1 to 25 employees. And for the most part, more customers are going to strangle them, yet that's what they keep chasing after. Not better customers, more customers.
You sound like a lawyer, Jack.
I know.
It depends, right? That's one of the first things, or it's probably taught sometime during day one or week one of law school, right? You have to say it depends. Because they can't say no if you ask them a question. You got to say it depends, right?
That's right.
Well, a couple of simple examples, and as Jack's mentioning, depending on the state of the company. We had a client who recently just bought another company, and he owns a company today, but he bought a separate company that's actually in a different industry for him. That's a common way that people maybe overlook as far as ways to grow or to expand into different product areas. So this client of ours bought this new company, and you know, one of the beauties of buying a company versus starting a company is you have existing clients, existing customers. So in this case, the company he bought had about 50 customers, and it's a fulfillment business. And as he's starting to go through...
What's fulfillment? What are we fulfilling? Our wishes to...
That's right. It's a genie business.
You open the bottle and...
That's right. You wave that wand and make your wishes. Then they make your wishes come true. Now, they're not fulfilling those kind of wishes, Jack. They're fulfilling usually orders for folks. So it could be folks that have an online business, something like an eBay business that's set up that don't want to be storing things in their garage or their living room. Also, they fulfill orders or needs for folks who are doing trade shows. They have needs for having a place to store their booths. A lot of folks have marketing materials that they want to be able to place somewhere that they put out, or different samples of stuff as well. So they fulfill a lot of different kinds of things.
Okay.
And as he's starting to really dig into this now and spend some time with his new company, one of the things that he's been talking to us a lot about in our last few meetings is this one really kind of pain in the Budinsky customer he's got, who takes a lot of time and makes it really difficult for them to fulfill the orders, because this company gets some orders in and they may have 10 pieces that need to be put into that order, and they've got 6 of them because they don't have everything there, because this person wants to make everything as it kind of comes in. Anyway, long story short, we came to the conclusion very quickly that, well, you don't want more of this kind of customer. As a matter of fact, you probably don't want this customer at all. And so one of the things that we're advising him to do is to raise the prices significantly to this person, to the point where if they do pay that price, that they'll be sure that they're making money on it. Because right now, they're probably losing money on this customer, and this would be the idea of having addition by subtraction. The amount of time, effort, and other costs that go into trying to fulfill this customer's wishes are just not worthwhile at this point.
How often a customer like that, once let go, brings a whole sigh of relief, like, man, I should have gotten rid of that customer a while ago. You know, fewer customers at higher prices are much easier to manage for the most part. You know, work harder at pleasing those current customers than acquiring more customers. If you get good programs in place, you can grow with those customers. You know, you just can't make the big assumption that, boy, if I put all my eggs into one basket, I'm going to lose. It depends on what stage you're at. And if you refine the systems, if you refine the attitude of treating good customers excellently, they're going to basically stay with you and grow with you.
Yeah, and another simple example, we had a client who he'd been in business for about 15 years. When we started working with him, and as we're talking early on in our meetings, one of the things that kept coming up, and I think he identified it, or he realized as we're talking through it, was that he had a lot of customers that just did not make sense for him. And it was a point that he had some customers that had been customers for a while, but he had grown and the company had grown and they hadn't grown with them. And they were expecting a lot more than what they were really compensating him for. And so for his business, it was becoming more unprofitable for them. And so he went through a cleansing process where he got rid of...
That's a good word, cleansing process. I like that.
Well, he got rid of about 20% of his customers in the matter of about a week. And again, he went back to him and said, hey, that's not the right way to do it. Again, he did it by saying, here's my new structure, my new pricing structure. And knowing that most of them were going to say, I'm not going to do that, because they're very, very price sensitive, not value sensitive to what he was trying to be able to deliver. And it was amazing to see how freeing it was for him. Yeah, because he had this weight on his shoulders that he was carrying with him of all these bad customers. And he came in the next few meetings, you could see him, his shoulders are back and his chest is out and he's smiling. He's saying, yeah, I have so much time now to kind of find, to get to things I hadn't been getting to, or to find some other good customers that are going to make more sense for me. So he'd been around for a while and he'd been kind of carrying this burden with him for a while. And I think many people that are out there listening today are probably doing the same thing. It's good to help to have that cleansing process and get that burden off of you. Or at the very least, again, as I mentioned with the first story here, charge one heck of a premium there. That's the pain in the butt premium that we call it. That's what
That's with two T's?
With two T's.
That's right.
Because they're going to be a pain in your butt as well as somebody else's butt, so they should be paying a premium for that.
Well, how do you start all this stuff? How do you start this analysis? You know, start with something simple. I answer my own question here. An 80-20 analysis. Everyone kind of knows what that is. 80% of your customers basically provide 20% of your revenue. And, the profits, you also want to understand who provides profits in your company. Also, the 80-20 will apply to that as well. So you basically fire the low-end clients. Those not providing profit to you, just list all your clients, list all your customers, a big list from one to whatever, and then look at that bottom 20% and look at them hard and say, what in the world am I servicing these people for? Do they have really long-term implications here, or am I kidding myself? So if they aren't providing much in the way of sales, not much in the way of profits, hey, they're great candidates for knocking out. And you'll find relief like we're talking about in many cases. You'll find more time available with your key employees because they aren't chasing what really is not going to amount to much for you in the future. And you can make that an annual process for your company to do an 80-20 analysis.
It's a great way to do it. I think you look at that, the 80-20 that Jack's talking about, you can also ask, as you're going through that list, that to get to the 80-20, figure out who's who, is you ask the question, do I want more customers like this? Usually it's pretty obvious. You don't even need to necessarily articulate the reasons why, but hey, if I don't want more of them, put them in that pile where that's probably going to be 20% that you're going to want to get rid of. So,
and like you were saying, Adam, raise the prices. That'll make them go away, and there's nothing but gain for you.
So keep that in mind, that not all customers are created equally, and it's okay to get rid of those folks and focusing on making profits. So stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to be revealing and digging into our dirty secret of the week. I'm Adam Sunhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners. We're business coaches. We can help you get unstuck from all those how questions in your business.
Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sunhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners, MVP. We're business coaches who help owners of small companies get unstuck from that state of how. When we say small companies, that means from 1 to 25 employees. Any sales, any product, we can help you. Don't you wrestle with all those how questions on your own. We can help. We love helping small businesses get unstuck.
All right, so our dirty secret this week is one that Jack and I have been talking about.
Can't wait.
Yeah, it comes up almost every day, it seems like. And we're still amazed at how it's still a secret, so that's what part of why we want to shine the light on it, especially on a show like this, to let people know about it. And that is, most small business owners do not know their numbers. Okay, let's say that again. Most owners of small businesses do not know their numbers.
I would say that is an extremely big truism. You know, we've been coaching together small business owners. We've been coaching, Adam and I, for going on 15 years. We've seen hundreds of small business owners and have coached them, many, many of them, to success. 90% of those clients don't really understand their financial statements when we start. We teach them that. They don't understand their numbers. When Adam talks about most small business owners don't understand their numbers, we're talking about a balance sheet, a profit and loss, and other type of cash flow, other type of analysis that makes it critical to run a successful business and sustain that successful business. We're always scratching our heads. How in the world can somebody run a company successfully and not have the numbers be part of that program?
Now, we're always amazed that people don't know this, okay? And every CPA we've talked to, folks who have been helping, counseling small business owners for years, and they're always surprised by this. And one of the ways that Jack and I helped uncover this is, one of our seven keys is presenting. And that sounds very formal, but we have our clients, in one of our first meetings, not the first meeting with us, is we have them present their financials. So we tell them to bring their most current balance sheet and their profit and loss for year to date and prior year, and we have them present that, okay? And it's really simple. First of all, we have them say, okay, can you bring those reports? Now, almost everybody can bring those reports because they've seen them before. These aren't like magic reports that they haven't heard of, but they can usually get them. They can print them off themselves. They can get their CPA to get them to them. They can get their office manager. Somebody can get the reports.
Yeah,
in their
they
hands,
like to
right?
call it the bookkeeper. But yeah,
okay.
Yeah. But
so they bring those, right? And so we'll have those out on the table in front of us, right? And they'll say, okay, well, here's my stuff. I said, great. Why don't you present your balance sheet first? Now here's what we often get. They'll be looking at, and you've got them there in front of them, and often they're looking, and they're kind of sheepishly grinning as they guess they've kind of pushed the one out in front. Is that the right one, right? Because even though the title's there, right, they're trying to guess to see if it's the right one. Now, once we get them on the right one, we have them present. It's nothing more complex than having them go through.
What do you see? Yeah. Tell us what you see. Right. Now there's a language. The accounting profession has been evolving for thousands of years, and they got it down pretty good. It's not an easy process to understand, but once you do, it becomes very powerful. But when you're looking at it for the first time and trying to explain or present, as Adam's saying, people don't know how to do that. Well, and we have seen grown men come to tears at that process, because we'll just look at them and say, go on, you present this. And yeah, until they either start talking about it or they break. I mean, they got to understand that. I don't understand the numbers. I don't understand my financial statements for my own company.
Well, if they're fortunate enough, if you're fortunate enough to have a CPA that you meet with on a regular basis, maybe it's quarterly, maybe it's a couple times a year, often they'll prepare these reports for you and they'll take you through it. And we made the same mistake early on. We'd take them through it, we'd be talking too much. And instead of recognizing that they had to be talking to us and be able to present these things. And as Jack's mentioning, we had a client a couple of years back that had gone through, you know, there's a program that's here in Cleveland. I know it's in several other cities as well. It's called the Goldman Sachs Small Business Program.
Yes, yes.
10,000 Small Business Program. And one of the keys that they focus on is teaching people about financials, right? And so this client came to us, and they'd been in business for over 30 years. They'd been graduates deemed. They'd been stamped on the forehead as graduates of this Goldman Sachs program. And we had them go through this. And I kid you not, grown woman, grown man, 30-plus years in business, in tears. I don't know what I'm looking at. I don't know what I'm looking at.
I should be. All kinds of emotions, guilt, and just an awareness of something they've been putting off all their life when running their business. To Adam's point, 30 years, and they don't know those basic numbers. And I got to believe a lot of you out there, a lot of you small business owners are exactly, in fact, I'd be willing to bet on it. Because when I threw out that number, 90% of our clients, I think that's true. It might even be a little low. When they start with us, they do not understand their financial statements. They cannot present to anybody, a bank, be it a bank, be it a major customer, be it a big deal where they have to present their company, they can't do it.
That's right. You're hitting on very good points, Jack, in terms of, okay, we've now, I think, established here in the first couple minutes as far as the fact that this is a fact, this secret that they don't get their numbers. But why is it important? You mentioned one key one, which is the banks. You know, our clients are routinely the ones that the banks are amazed at how well they present and know their numbers. They aren't just filling out sheets. They aren't, you know, sending, you know, things off to their bookkeeper or their CPA to fill stuff out. They're presenting, and they own those numbers. They're able to talk about those numbers. As we were talking about in the first segment, we have a lot of our clients that we give them guidance on how to go acquire other companies. Okay, well, tell you what, if you don't understand your numbers, chances of you going to look to acquire another company to grow, whether it be to add your current business or go into a new business, there's no way you're going to go and even start that first step of going, because you aren't going to show you. Also, what do you do? You ask them for their numbers, right?
That is.
And what
correct.
Are you looking at? You're not sure what you're looking at for your numbers. If somebody else's numbers, you don't know what you're looking at for their numbers either, right? So being able to do that, being able to keep your team informed. Okay, so presenting to your team about what's going on in the business, to be able to share those numbers with them.
Well, after all, you're in the business of making profits, aren't right. you? And one of the key reports defined under these numbers category is a profit plan. And quite often we're asked questions in between our meetings, especially with our clients. You know, should I hire this guy? Geez, what's it going to cost me? Can I afford to hire this person at whatever number they're considering? How do you make a decision to spend money without a profit plan? And a profit plan is nothing than taking a profit and loss statement and projecting it out. That's what it is.
I think what most people do, this goes back to, I was watching a show with a prophet, you know, months ago, and this guy had a sign company.
That's a good program. Yeah, I like that program.
Marcus Simonis, the prophet, P-R-O-F-I-T, not P-R-O-P-H-E-T. But anyway, so this guy he owned a sign company, right? And he said, how did you decide to start paying yourself? How did you decide to hire people? Well, I had some money in the bank, is what he said. I had money in the bank. I laughed, and first I said, okay, that's a very honest answer. And that's where most people look. They okay, if I have money in the bank,
it must be okay.
It must be okay to hire somebody, right? Yeah.
But they know tomorrow's going to come because they've been around long enough, and they continually are vexed with that pressure.
Right. So the numbers are very, very key for lots and lots of parts of your business. And you're never too old. You're never too far into the business to learn how to start doing it. That's one of the things we do with all of our clients to make sure that they understand their numbers. And it's amazing the comfort they get with it. And how many times, I can't count the times, Jack, that we've had clients say how much fun they're having with the accounting now. Because they've had questions for years about these numbers that they haven't known how to articulate and express it. And the empowerment that they now have, that they get it and they can talk that game, is fantastic.
And we love it, too. We have a great time with that stuff.
All right, stay tuned. After our break, we'll be coming back to see what's on Jack's mind with the How Come part of our show. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners. We're business coaches. We can help you get unstuck from all those how questions in your business.
Welcome back to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners, MVP. We're business coaches who help owners of small companies get unstuck from the state of how. Don't wrestle with all those how questions on your own. We can help. We love helping small business owners get unstuck.
All right, we're at the portion of our show where we're going to be delving into what we like to refer to as the how come portion of this. We get a chance to kind of see what's on Jack's mind. And all right, Jack, so the how come part here is, again, Jack's going to be pondering some things. He starts his questioning with that phrase of how come as he looks at the world around him. So what do we got in your mind today, Jack?
Looking at the world since last Monday, how come? And our engineer is going to like this one. He likes stuff like this. So how come Superman could stop bullets with his chest, but always ducked when someone throws a gun at him? Why is that? That really got to me over the weekend, and I just couldn't get it out of my mind. So I was pondering that so much that I thought of another how question, a little more appropriate for the task at hand here. How come so many people don't have a clue about what it takes to lead an organization, especially the President of the United States? Now, I'm sitting here with my partner in Cleveland, Ohio, and the Republican National Convention's about to go on, or it is going on today, and all the chaos that comes with that, both good and bad. So this one, you know, what got to me, I was reading the paper over the weekend, and there was this guy from California, Bob Kinsley, who wrote a letter to the editor, basically, and all he said was, running the federal government bears little or no resemblance to Mr. Trump's real estate business. I don't believe he has the faintest idea of what he's getting into. Now, what I started to ponder, I said, okay, well, here's a guy who has run a multi-billion dollar worldwide organization employing thousands, hundreds of thousands of people around the world. And that got me to think about the current guy sitting in the office, President Obama, who was a community organizer, a teacher, a state senator, and 6 months in the U.S. Senate. Now, he's running an organization worldwide bigger than anything in the world. And here's a guy like Trump who has basically run an organization like that. So it got me thinking further about organizations and how many people just don't have a clue. They don't have a clue about what it takes to lead an organization. And in our coaching endeavors here, Adam and I, that's one of the things we teach a small business owner, how to be a CEO, how to be a leader. How do you run an organization? And we boil a lot of complexity down to three words. Somebody who's running an organization has to know how to plan, direct, and control. That summarizes the CEO of any organization. And Mr. Obama is a CEO of the United States. So the question we often pose to our small business owners, and it's a lot easier to see that because they're so small, is we'll ask them, what's the plan? Now, every leader has to have a plan. And once that plan is laid out, the organization of people has to direct. That's who he has to direct to get that plan completed. And the control he uses should be meetings, reports, and if everything goes well, they're moving along to get the plan done, the vision of that company led by the owner, led by the CEO. So it's certainly a matter of size and scope and the culture after that. But basically, if you can plan, direct, and control, you can run an organization. If you, to the degree you do those well and can articulate them, the people following and relying on you are going to feel pretty good about it.
All right. So I think your point is well taken, Jack. Most people have no clue what it means or how to run an organization. But I tell you what, almost everybody can know what it feels like to be part of a good, well-run organization versus one that's just, you know, completely messed up. And I think a lot of the frustration we're seeing, whether it be in the, you know, you're using the example of the government here, where people feel it's not working right. People have a sense of that. So you have a sense of that too, as you go around this, bring it into the small business world here. If you're going out in your world, if you go to a restaurant, if you go to your local dry cleaner, you have a sense of whether that organization is well run based on your experience with that organization. So if you're running or you've been involved with companies that are doing well, you have a good sense of what that looks like. Even if you can't necessarily articulate it, you can certainly feel it and know what it looks like to have a well-run organization.
That's right. You know, that doesn't happen by accident. It's an owner who has a good plan and a vision, and he's directing his employees or her employees to carry out that vision within a culture. So you'll see in a restaurant, the restaurant example, you'll see cleanliness throughout the restroom, throughout the windows, throughout the tables. You'll see courteous, informed waiters and waitresses. You'll see clean dishes, great food presentation, all the good kinds of things in a spirit there. So you know when you're in an organization that's well run. But many times people don't quite conclude that. You know, I always do, and I know Adam does. We'll sit and we'll comment on certain organizations that are just done right. Well, again, that's not done by accident.
Right. I think many of us in our own personal examples can see it, and the folks out there today listening too can think about it. If you've been involved with any kind of volunteer work, okay, that may be with your kids' sports team. It could be with the kids at school. It could be with a local community group. Often what you see with folks who take leadership roles is instead of what Jack very well articulated, which is the plan, direct, control, that's your job. Your job as the leader is to get the plan pulled together, to help people get the plan pulled together, first of all. Instead, what most of them tend to do is they tend to just do stuff. They get up there and start doing more things. And so what happens is you look at the leaders of those organizations and people think they're nuts. And nobody wants to step up and take the role next because, well, I don't want to keep doing all the stuff that person is doing, because all I do is I keep doing more and more and more. And that is not your role at all. I think we see the same thing in the small business world. Whenever something happens, or often the owners will freeze because, well, if I make that change, or if I terminate that employer or make this thing happen, it's going to fall on my shoulders. They almost feel that need of having it come onto their shoulders. And so I see it a lot within the volunteer nonprofit stuff that we see in the small business world. And that happens, it's going to happen with bigger organizations as well. But I think people have to kind of see it. So here's how you do it. And that's one of the biggest things we teach our clients is, it starts with the plan. If you can't answer what the plan is, or your team can't answer what the plan is, okay, we can't direct and control anything.
What are we doing? Yeah, and we aren't talking about some fancy academia-driven, 80-page report that confuses everybody and makes communication even more difficult. It's something relatively simple. Where is this organization going? What kind of culture do I want to have? How big do I want to be? And when I define service and lay that out to my employees, I have to get good employees. If I don't have good employees and I'm not diligent and demanding to do that, my organization is never going to be A+. Can't be. Those bad employees will just drag you down. So when you have the plan, directing then can become fairly easy if you have good employees.
Right. Well, we see most of the time it's usually there are decent employees. They aren't being directed. We were meeting with a client Friday, and this employee keeps coming up that they're complaining about, and we aren't clear that the employee is the problem. There's very poor to little direction from the owner, the CEO here, and that's usually more the case. Where again, it's like you have good people. It's visualize the birds in the nest. They're waiting. Their mouths are open. They're hungry. They're waiting for stuff. And that's part of your job as the owner to come in there and feed them good stuff and give them good direction. Not just kind of, hey, I hired them because they know what they're supposed to do. Okay, well, that's usually a recipe for failure or disaster.
That's right. You know, and again, I'll repeat, the size and scope of the organization becomes important. For somebody to run a worldwide organization, they have to have had some exposure, some experience to what a worldwide organization looks like from a management standpoint. Hundreds of thousands, perhaps, of people, billions of dollars, foreign countries, and making success out of that mix is no easy task. And you just can't put, you know, an amateur in there. Because if you do, there's going to be problems. There's going to be operational problems. And that can become, at that scope and size, very difficult to put your finger on just one problem, because they're multiple. Where a good plan, well-organized, with good people, that wins. So as I was pondering and reading that little write-in to the editors, I'm thinking, okay, here's a guy with at least the exposure worldwide, and he's going to replace someone who had nothing of that scope and size.
Right.
So what are the expectations? God knows. That's another discussion for another day.
We'll start to see. That's a good point, too. As we look at the small business world as well, and this would be true of the big business or big government world as well, when you understand clearly and it's being articulated what the plan is, and you have confidence in that plan, it's amazing how everybody starts to get pretty comfortable as far as what's going on. So one of the things we instill on our coaching clients is the ability to go run any organization, whether it's a current company or something else. Again, they can run it knowing that their job is plan, direct, control.
There's a way to do that. Keep it that simple. Right. That's right.
All right. Stay tuned. As we come back, we're going to be sharing our small business success story of the week. I'm Adam Sunhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners. We're business coaches. We can help you get unstuck from those how questions in your business, and there are a lot of them.
Welcome back. Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sunhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners, MVP. We're business coaches who help owners of small companies get unstuck from the state of how. Don't wrestle with all those how questions, and there are many of them. Don't wrestle with those on your own. We can help you. We really can. We love helping small business owners get unstuck, and we're very successful with the process we use.
And so this rolls nicely into our next segment here, which is we're going to share a small business success story. It's one of our coaching clients' success stories. And a couple of quick reminders. We talk about our coaching clients. This is companies that are typically anywhere from 1 to 25 employees. When we talk about small business, that's our definition of small business. And we talk about our 7 keys to success, which is how we frame what we do in terms of how we coach our clients. And I'll try to highlight which ones are the most important here. And so for this particular story today, I'll highlight those, which are the profit plan, the vision, and the organization plan. Those are the three
good ones,
three
for
keys
sure.
That we focus quite a bit on with that. So as I always mention, you're always welcome to call in with your suggestions if you have any, or if you have any questions, please feel free to reach out to us here at 440-946-9468. So let me get into this situation real quick. So we had a client. And I'm sure many of you can relate to this, especially for those of you who have partners in the business. And in this case, there was a lot of infighting amongst the partners. And they were really focused on the wrong things. And it was wound up kind of stunting the growth of the business. So what do I mean by that? So they were focused on each other. And they're bickering about each other. And there were side calls between the partners that complained about one and what was going on here or there. And so they were... Again, very typical. Yeah, this happens a lot with clients. We get into
the middle of those a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of our work is psychology. We should have the study behind that, because we spend a lot of time on that.
We do. We have a lot of the partners can be anything from people who used to be friends or pure business partners to spouses to siblings to you name it. We've had all kinds of partners that we've dealt with over our time together, and it's amazing how similar this is. Where often we'll have a one-on-one discussion, and it'll be very different than it is in the group, or they'll bring up things to us that as they kind of role play it and practice it to get ready to kind of bring it up in the group. And it's very important if you have partners to be very open and honest and frank with each other, and it can get troublesome, because often you have partners too. As we look at, I mentioned our 7 keys, we also have our 3 circles of the business that we look at.
3 circles, what are those?
All right, first one, which most people know and love, is the product or service of the company, which is where most companies start. You also have marketing and sales, which helps drive the business and grow. And the third piece, which often gets kind of pushed aside until the company reaches a certain level, which is the administrative piece of it, which is the numbers and the planning and the people side of stuff.
So those three circles encompass everything that can go on in a company. So no matter what your problem, you could plot those in some form within those interlocking three circles. You should check out our website to see a little better visual of both the seven keys and the three circles.
Sure. If you go to MaximumVP.com, there's a tab there called MVP Playbook, and they're both underneath there. You can see those visuals very, very well. So in this case, it was a little different. You know, often you have the case where, you know, most of the partners are pretty good at the product or service. In this case, we had one partner that was kind of the product or service. We had one partner that was really in charge of marketing and sales, and one was in charge of administrative. And so it didn't, people don't necessarily start that way, but it's often how things kind of wind up being the case. So a couple things that we had with the issue I mentioned before, there was some infighting with the partners. And a big part of what was driving that was the vision. I mentioned that as one of the three keys I was going to highlight today. So the vision part of this. They weren't all on the same page. So we talk about a vision as 10 years out. You are wherever you are today. Where do you see yourself? Where do you see your company 10 years from now?
Present tense, that's right. Somewhere 10 years from now, 2026. That's what we're talking about today.
And what we know about, and we've discovered in our 15 years together here coaching small companies, most people don't think that far out. They're focused on this month maybe, this week for sure, or today for sure. They stop thinking about 5-10 years out. It's a big part we try to do is get them
well,
thinking
they
that
might
way
have
again.
Thought, they might have thought that way when they first started their business. Yeah. But with the daily grind and the operating mode of let's take care of today and no time for anything and blah, 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 the last thing they seem to want to do is just sit back and visualize where they could be 10 years from now.
Right.
And we know you can be anywhere in 10 years.
So with that background, you can imagine how difficult it can be to get even one person to be able to state clearly where they want to be, let alone getting, in this case, we had three partners to get them all on the same page. It's very difficult to do. So we had some good discussions around that to make sure it was clarified, to say, where do we all want to be? And there was some division amongst the partners, but we were able to get them on the same page where they all saw eventually having an exit for the business. And one of the keys of that is it comes back around now to the organization plan I was mentioning. Okay, what we had is we had the one partner was the key part of the product or service. Well, when you have a person who's a big part of the product or service, it makes it very difficult to sell that because you aren't selling something that's there. You don't have an organization in place to make things run. So they had the issue there where they weren't having that, you know, as part of it, and they weren't focused on the profit plan. One of the partners is more of a job guy. We talk about job people versus entrepreneurs.
Hey, what's a profit plan?
Yeah,
a profit plan. What is a profit plan,
Adam?
That's
going to forecast out our sales and our expenses by month for the next year to show how we're going to make money. And we had one partner who was more of a job guy that was focused more on how he was making money, putting money in his pocket at the expense of the other two partners. Now, when this company started out, the other two partners, even though they weren't product guys, they were part of what helped to finance the start of the company. And that got discounted pretty quickly as the company started to kind of get up and running. So they had to focus everybody on the profit plan and showing that, hey, there's enough money here, and hey, the partner that's very actively involved in the product or service could get compensated for that, but also they all needed to be able to make profits. But they weren't focused on that profit plan. So getting them to start to rally around that profit plan, it was amazing. Within a few months, how things started to kind of calm down, where, you know, the bickering, infighting didn't go away totally, but it started to subside because the energies were now refocused and having confidence and having some discussions that hadn't been had in years started to happen, where they all started to get more comfortable with each other and they were being more open about what was going on.
You take the personal stuff out of it. You have numbers, and, you know, one of the great things about numbers is their objectivity here. You know, they don't take sides one way or another. You know, they're very black or white, and just how good they are when you put them down. But basically, they're not personal, and that's a big deal in a situation like this. Many situations.
So with all this, you know, decrease in animosity and taking that energy that was put to some negative stuff to be put towards positive stuff, this company more than doubled in the next 3 years. So it's amazing. It's not a snap of fingers, but it also, they start to focus that energy in the right areas. Get everybody focused on the same page. They knew where they were trying to go big picture. they also brought a lot of other people into the organization, where this one partner who was very active in the product or service now all of a sudden brought a handful of people on board. They weren't employees, but brought them on as contractors to get some of the work done and started to now build an organization of something that could actually be saleable. So that click, the clicking, you know, for everybody to kind of now see things the same way, where they're all looking to, hey, eventually get out of this thing and to sell it, all of a sudden brought them together because they all realized they had the same desire. And now to see how to go about doing that. The focus on the seven keys was a big part of that, to get them all
huge,
kind of moving in that right
huge,
direction.
A huge piece of that. That's right, Adam.
So, yeah, so this is how things can happen pretty quickly. And when you have partners involved, and it's having those kind of discussions, but getting them focused on the vision, first of all, to kind of know where everybody wants to be on that same page of where you want to end up. Getting everybody's roles kind of, you know, defined. Here's who's doing what, and getting, you know, those holes within the organization filled by people other than just the partners, and focusing on profits. And realize that the company's doing well and making profits, all the owners are going to succeed, and, you know, there's ways to compensate each other if you see the profit plan. If some are doing more day-to-day than others, it's okay. That's not unusual either, where you've got more active partners in a business. Okay, it's okay to compensate the ones who are more active day-to-day, you know, with, you know, salaries, what have you, but then to have the profits being shared. And so that's where these things can be very, very helpful to get things focus much more clearly. So if you're having some issues with partners, that's a big thing that Jack and I have spent a lot of time with over the years, all different kinds of partnerships, to get them on the right page and focus on those seven keys.
That's right. The seven keys we have proven time and again, if you stay coachable, and we're business coaches, if you stay coachable and keep struggling, sometimes it's a struggle, and most of the time it's hard work, but it fits into everybody's schedule. And if you stay with it, your company's going to be successful.
Yes, you will.
And we define that as growing sustainable profits. That's, after all, what you're in business for.
All
and
right.
We can plug in almost any situation.
Well,
we're
up against it now, Jack. So we want to thank everybody again for joining us on this week's edition of Dirty Secrets of Small Business. And you can tune in every Monday at noon. If you have any questions before the next show, email them to us at radio@maximumvp.com or give us a call at 877-849-0670.
At Maximum Value Partners, we work hard to build long-term relationships and become not only your valued advisors, but your trusted friends. If you're looking to be successful, knowledgeable, and a business owner along with those, you take your company and we can take your company where you want to go. We can help.
In case you missed any part of the show, you can subscribe on iTunes and make sure you leave a review there. Or you can go on to WINTradio.com and archive programs and download to your computer, look under the show and the date, or you can listen on your mobile device at tunein.com.